We can't even do a countdown to begin these because the time difference and the lag between our conversation makes it go, hello,
Yeah.
we can give it a
We'll
go.
just have to get, yeah, why not?
Okay,
One,
three,
two.
two, one. Hello!
Hello. We
It's
tried.
close enough.
Welcome to the transatlantic, trans global, I would say, very international intro to this week's episode of the Odd Jobs podcast with your host, with your host, Pat Higgins, who is currently in Australia,
You're now in
just outside
Australia a bit.
Sydney. I'm back in Australia now. Yeah, I was in Australia briefly. Now I'm back in Australia and I'm here for the next week and a bit. Yeah, and then Ruby Carr, where are
Yeah,
you?
just London. Just where I always
Hey.
am, just always here. So
Hey, sometimes you're in Southampton, okay? Let's not sell yourself
to
short.
be fair, I know, and sometimes other bits of mainly England. L love,
Mainly, yeah.
love to come to
Oh, yeah.
Wales.
I was about to say that's the UK, Ruby. You actually go international.
Yeah, I would love to come to Wales. Love going to Scotland, and I'm
Yeah.
determined to go to Ireland.
2026, we're getting you to Ireland. 110.
Yeah. Anyway, this is important right now because what we need to be doing is introducing the wonderful episode you're about to listen to.
My God, it's such a good
Oh my God.
episode.
I literally
Oh.
was retelling some of these stories to my family at Christmas because I was like, these are so funny.
Yeah, oh, this is an absolute clanger. I don't know anybody who came with better prepared, with better, like rich stories with just so many characters and fabric and setting than our wonderful guest this week, the amazing Jos Norris.
Who, by the way, if you really enjoyed this episode and you love it, and we will remind you at the end, Jos Norris is currently on a UK tour.
Oh, see Jos live. If you haven't seen, we talk about it in the episode. But Jos's live shows just have to be gone. You have to see, you have to experience them. They are unique, one of a kind. You won't have seen anything like him. They are hilariously fun and silly, and I just cannot tell you enough. I'm not recommending, I'm not shouting out, I'm demanding that you go see Jos live.
Yeah, and he really should. And he's going all over the place. He's already started the tour, but there are still lots and lots of dates available. Not lots and lots of dates
100%.
available. What I mean is lots and lots of dates coming up because he's in demand everywhere.
Yes,
I mean.
he is yeah, all over the UK. But yeah, I think without further ado, we should just get straight into this absolute cracker of an episode.
Yeah, enjoy!
Enjoy.
But
Yeah, this
yeah,
is an intervention.
I do think I'm going to do a show about gambling and violence because
Her
I have a love.
30s have been eventful thus far.
Can you put money on everything on a roulette wheel so that you get something?
Yeah, but
Or do they not let you do
you'd
that?
lose
Because you
money.
can put like something on this and something on that, but you would
But
lose.
if the odds were, if you put all your money on things that were really specific, so the odds were very good, and then one of them came up and the odds were better than the number of things you've divided it by,
Well, it's because
they probably have plans for
I
that.
was going to
It
say,
can't be
I feel
possible
like
to
this
do
is
that.
mathematically, but also, isn't roulette one where they like spin it and they're like, place your bet? So you don't have time to put it on every single one, right?
Oh,
Because it's
yeah.
once the ball is spinning that you have to place your bets, isn't I
it?
guess maybe someone worked that out and then they were like, we're going to have to
Yeah,
add
we're going
time
to have to do it while
here.
there's wheels going around.
If we give them enough time, they're going to best us. Oh, anyways, welcome to the Odd
Thank you for
Jobs
having
podcast,
me.
Jos Norris. Thank
Thanks.
you so
Hey,
much for coming.
guys. Pleasure.
It is a
Absolute
pleasure to have
pleasure.
you here. Odd Jobs podcast is where we just talk about all the odd jobs that people do in order to get them to the very cool job they have.
Yeah.
So before we get into your odd jobs, I
Oh,
feel like
yeah.
we should give a proper introduction to all our listeners as to who you are. So Jos Norris, you're a very acclaimed
Oh,
comedian,
no.
writer, and actor.
Stop.
No, you
Please.
take
No,
the
it's not
listen.
true.
You take it in.
No, I
This is
hate
my
it. I
favorite part of the podcast
refuse.
where we get this feigned humility off of
No, God, no. Yes,
comedians.
more,
No, because
please.
also the next one that I'm about to say,
Oh,
I
yeah.
remember telling you in Edinburgh,
Oh,
well
yeah.
done for this. And you were
Oh.
like, oh no. And I'm like, so I get to tell you again,
Yeah,
well
you
done.
did. You told me off about this.
Well done. So you are
Well
the
done.
winner.
stop it. You are the winner of the Comedian's Choice Award for Best Show, the WOW Award for Best Comedy, and Best Comedy at the Buxton Fringe.
Oh, yeah. Nominated for Best Comedy at the Buxton Fringe. Oh. Didn't win, Ruby.
That was Ruby who was like, he won. I was like, amazing.
Yeah,
I'll put that down.
No, sadly not.
Speaking of nominees, you were nominee also for the Malcolm Hardy Award for Comic Originality.
Yeah.
And the Chortle Award for Best Music and Variety Act.
Yeah. Wow, it's actually a good bunch of stuff,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
We're not even done yet.
No.
You were nominated for the David Nobbs Memorial Trust New Comedy Writing Award.
Too many words in that award.
Short com sitcom writing competition for your sitcom, The Happiness Chain.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Odd Jobs Podcast, Joss Norris.
Thanks for having me.
What did we miss?
The next up biggest award in comedy you left off.
Nominee.
Runner up.
Oh my God, I can't believe I missed that.
I really hate that I said that. Yeah. But I feel like the list was so complete.
Yeah.
Because obviously I have a running tally of every award.
Yeah, you've got your
nominated
bio
in my head.
Normally
people don't talk about them because who cares? But when somebody does make the effort of going through every single one, there was then a little bit of me that was like, I've got to mention the other one.
It could have been me missing it.
No,
100%.
No,
but part of me
thinks you
need to get onto Holly Ebden and tell her to update the website.
Oh, is it not on her website?
It could have.
I'm seeing her on Wednesday.
I was on your website and hers.
Maybe I've not updated mine.
And I think it was.
Maybe
because
I've
when you said it, I was like, I feel like I've read that.
We've done this to some other apps. Other guests being like, that's not on your website, by the way.
Right. Actually, this is just a really useful kind of reminder to, sort of update my web presence.
I love that you corrected us because that's good confidence.
Well, you told me off for doing myself down in Edinburgh.
For being humble.
I can't remember what I did. I think I said, it's all a load of shit. Who cares?
Yeah.
And you went, no, you've earned this.
Classic Fringe.
Or something.
You earned it. And also Fringe is the place to talk yourself up to everyone, no matter what the thing is. Being like, yeah, I'm amazing, I'm incredible.
Yeah.
And so I was yelling at
you. It's very random, the whole thing. It's so sort of, because the first week of this year's Fringe, I remember like just telling myself like, this is awful and you've made a terrible mistake again. You should go home. Why do you ever do this?
Is that just the first week of every single Fringe?
Yeah. And you're just like, it's always a disaster or it's brilliant. So I had one day where I was feeling horrible and like this, I don't like this. And I forgot how stressful and like competitive and nasty this is.
Yeah.
And then the next day, a very lovely review came out that then seemed to like switch on everything else. Because as soon as one person has like given you the validation,
then everyone
else is like, oh, I guess this is one of the good ones. And then suddenly the rest of the room is fine.
It was one of the good ones.
Thank you so much. That's pretty much. But you are so aware of like the total randomness of like somebody decided it was good and now everyone else like turns up to agree.
It's so interesting that you...
So you want to be proud, but also you want to be like, God, this whole business is crazy.
I mean, it is. But I genuinely find it so interesting that you still feel that way, because in my head, you are like a Fringe, like you are someone who I'm going to see every single Fringe. No, genuinely, because I feel like I remember the first time when I like first got into comedy and I was working or whatever else, I worked for a production company, objectively funny, and you were quite friendly with a lot of the people involved.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone was like, Jaws Art is one of the best alternatives, like you have to go see it. And I'd never heard, I didn't know you, I was brand new to comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to go see your show, Mr. Fruit Salad.
And
I was like, that's one of the best things I've ever seen.
You.
That was incredible. That show was fucking phenomenal. And I was like, okay, so that guy's like the guy of the Fringe.
And it feels like
you and like some of the other alternative comics, like John, I think of like John Luke as well, and stuff. And I'm like, you guys are people who I don't think I would waste my time reading a review of you or John Luke, because I'm like, well, I'm just going to that show.
I'm just
going to your show because I just know it's going to be exactly what I want to see, especially at the Fringe.
That's really nice to know.
But it's interesting that you're like, a review came out and it was nice. I'm like, surely you were, but also it makes me feel a lot better that I'm like, if Joss Norris still feels this way, I can still feel this way.
I think it's a sort of a double-edged thing of like partly, I think COVID was a weird thing where like, because I did the Fruit Salad show just before COVID, and that sort of felt like it was the first show people kind of paid attention to and that broke out a little bit. So I felt like I kind of started to get a sense of like, things are going all right, just before everything sort of changed a bit anyway.
Yeah.
And also I think on some level you just have to have more of an awareness of like, everything we do is like stupid bollocks anyway.
Yeah.
So as soon as you start to get a sense of yourself, like, because I have an audience at the Fringe that likes what I do, that means I should start bigging myself up a bit more. I'm too aware of like how completely fucking stupid everything that we do is. So I never really want to let that bit of myself be like, you know.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It's interesting. Anyways, we're not here to talk about your success.
We want to talk about the other shit.
You're
about
great
how great you are as a comedian.
Oh, Mr. Fruit Salad, amazing show. Shut up.
We don't need it.
About all the odd jobs that have got you to the very cool position that you are today.
Yeah.
Okay, so first question for you, Josh. Mm-hmm. What was the first ever way that you made money?
First ever
way? Doesn't need to be a job.
I'm trying to remember whether my first actual job came before like a sort of a hustle I had at school. Because my first actual job was I worked at the Salisbury Playhouse. I was an usher.
Oh, but I love the Salisbury Playhouse.
Do you? Yeah. You know Salisbury Playhouse?
Well, the weird side note on this is that that's how I met your brother through the Salisbury Playhouse.
Really? Yeah. Shit. Doing what?
A writing course. Oh. He was running it.
Are you from Salisbury?
No, I'm Southampton.
Right. But when
Salisbury near Southampton?
Odeon. Yeah, it's
okay,
fine.
Great.
No, is it an Odeon or is it a View? There's a huge cinema in Southampton. I saw Lord of the Rings there.
It's gone now.
No.
I know, now it's just big car park. But there's a different cinema. Anyway.
The Balrog coming out at Southampton Odeon is one of my happiest memories of my life. Yeah. I loved that guy.
I love that you've such a distinct memory of where you were when you watched it as well.
Yeah, just the Balrog. Can't remember anything else okay. about that cinema or Fair. About Southampton, but I remember seeing the Balrog come out and going, fucking hell, this is living.
Yeah. No, but I remember doing that course. Yeah. And during that course, I was doing script writing and being like, I want to be a playwright. And then he said, oh, you're funny. You should meet my brother.
No
He's a
way.
Comedian. And I went, I'm not doing comedy. I'm a serious playwright. And we could have been
How
friends.
How the mighty have
When
fallen.
Was it? Was this ages and ages ago?
It would have been, God, it would have been like 11 years ago now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you ever still try to write serious stuff?
Occasionally.
For his consideration? No. I can send it to him if you want. I can get it in front of him. I know the guy. I've got an in.
We didn't even know our guy.
He won't listen to anything I suggest.
We know the guy.
Yeah. I know the guy. No, wait, why were we talking about? Oh, because you're working at Salisbury Playhouse.
So I was an usher at Salisbury
Lovely
Playhouse.
Theater.
And so, wait,
Lovely
Salisbury theater. Is in South England
it's
somewhere?
It's like Wiltshire.
Yeah.
Graham.
Yeah.
Vague.
The south in the middle.
It's right. between Southampton and Portsmouth, right?
Is
Pompey
it?
Scone?
No, it's,
like
no, it's the other way.
Because Portsmouth's on the coast as well.
Yeah.
Salisbury's,
so it's
Salisbury's like up. Yeah, it's England. It's the south of England.
Sorry, I said inland.
Right, yeah, it's England. Yeah.
I'm not that thing.
I'm actually French.
Oh, the fucking Irish girl has the clue. Sorry. Seven Portsmouth. Yes,
yeah,
that's
England,
in England.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
No, inland.
Inland, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they're on the coast,
yeah,
as you said. Yeah.
Little Bless. Triangle. Yeah, it might be in between them.
I can't. I'm just trying to remember, like, from going on the trains to get to Salisbury to see stuff at the theatre.
Yeah.
But it was a very old demographic of people who go to watch things at Salisbury.
Yeah. It's
right.
a real
very,
vibe.
So I think, was it Salisbury or Chichester, where someone told me in the programming team that they're not allowed to repeat shows like Shakespeare's that they did even 20 years ago.
Really?
That they
people will be like,
because
seen that?
Yeah, people are like, we've already seen this one.
It's
like,
the same audience.
I'd assume they'd be able to because they're dying. The
yeah. There'll be a big turnover.
They are thriving in Chichester.
They cling on. They really
draining
cling on.
Draining the NHS
down
there,
aren't they? Yeah. I was born in Chichester. That's funny.
Oh my God,
I've really pinged around all these kind of like...
Theatery.
Elderly theatery towns in the south, yeah. That explains a lot.
So you were an usher at the Salisbury Theatre?
I was an usher at the Salisbury Playhouse, but I also, I think, well, maybe it was around the same time, I had like a sort of a side hustle where I was passed up for like a prefect role. Actually, Ooh. No, so this would have been later, but I've started now, so I'll talk about it. But you know, you get to sixth form and you're like, did you have prefects?
Yeah.
So like if you're a good student, you get picked to be a prefect, and I really
were
prided
we
myself
all prefects?
On
You were. I was a prefect, but they. I've got a story about them.
Okay. I want to hear the story.
Yeah.
Tell.
At my head girl interview, because I went for head girl. And
Whoa.
They, at my head girl interview, I yelled at my head teacher, "I will not be your puppet," and he stormed out. And then I got.
And you didn't get it.
And I got a senior Strange. Prefect instead.
Right. That's pretty good.
Strange.
That's really good.
I was just prefect.
Right.
Yeah.
I got passed up for all of it, and I really identified as like. A good boy,
I
like a good student. That
I,
was like a strong
yeah,
part of my identity. Was like, I want to be a good boy.
You give good boy energy.
It's my main like facet of my personality. I think is I'm desperate to be a good boy all the time.
Did you go to a mixed school?
No, boys school. The sixth form was mixed actually.
Because I went to a mixed school, and let me tell you, like girls, there was always like you only had 12 prefects who were girls and 12 who were boys. They split it because gender is, you know, obviously a real binary. It's a Catholic school. Yeah, we're fighting a losing battle on that one. Anyways, but the 12 girls, it was always like, there's always a good 25, 30, like, you know, girls being good. It was real easy to pick who the boy prefects were going to be.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's not the standard of
there
good,
aren't very many who actually
solid
want to put the
students.
Yeah.
It's just not as high in the boy demographic. So I'm surprised.
I think they just really, I think it was quite a sort of sport focused school.
Okay.
I think they, so a lot, the head boy was a sort of a rugby type boy.
Yeah.
And the others that I can remember, I think there was a lot of like, if you were into your sport, then you would get one of these, and I think I was a bit too sort of stupid, maybe, like too silly. I would like,
oh, okay, I'd playful.
Stick an orange on the wall or something, and then point at it and make everyone laugh at it. Like stick it on with a pin on a pin board.
Okay,
I don't know why that's popped into my head, but this was the kind of thing I was doing in the lead up.
Yeah,
and then was devastated that had kind of like undermined all my good work of trying to be like a good academic
boy.
Student.
Yeah.
So I thought I will get a prefect role by proving to them how much I do for the school.
Oh wow!
So I sold. I got my mum to knit pencil toppers. Like little hats that you could put on the end of your pencil. They're called pencil warmers.
Okay.
I can't remember now if this was her idea or my idea, because this feels more like something she would have come up with.
Okay.
It's a mad thing for me to come up with by myself, to go straight to my mum and go like, knit me a hat to put on pencils.
Also, but that's so small.
So maybe she was doing them anyway.
Could you knit that?
That's tiny work.
I think... Because I also seem to remember that she, around the same time, was knitting willy warmers for relatives as a joke stocking filler.
So we know, like, where the silly gene comes from.
Yeah. She's all sticking oranges to the wall. Yeah. My dad being like, work hard. Well, I'm going, if you put an orange on the wall, people will like you.
This is for your willy.
So she was sort of like a wacky relative, thought it would be funny to buy her nieces and nephews like willy warmers.
Yeah.
Presumably just nephews, actually, but whatever. So I think maybe the idea came from her, and she went, you could sell these at school as pencil toppers. You won't get in trouble if you say they're pencil toppers.
Okay.
And they had an M on them, because I was
very
in M House. Yeah, I don't really know. I'm trying to remember what the design of these things
very
was.
Very slim design. For a penis. So you were actually putting wool condoms on pencils.
Yeah, I was selling knitted condoms.
And like, I should be a prefect.
I can't remember how much of the backstory of this I knew at the time, and whether I was like, I can't talk about this, or whether mum just came to me with the proposal and like hid certain parts of it. But basically, she'd created this design. She had like a knitting pattern for knitted condoms that she was giving to her nephews. And thought we could double up and sell them as pencil toppers.
Yeah, she was Dragon's Denning this.
So they were. I was in M House, which we had M different house. Houses, and each house.
Oh, did you go to like a posh school?
Went to quite a posh school. It was a grammar school. It was the boys' grammar school in Salisbury.
Okay.
So each house was named after a famous bishop from Salisbury. Yeah.
There's a bishop just called M.
No,
like
his name was Martival.
Oh, God.
So
okay.
We were in Martival House. Okay. But I think
even
that school was aware of how it sounded to say that we're inducting you into Martival House. So they would call it M.
Literally martyr.
Yeah.
Wait, is that where he comes from? Salisbury?
Maybe.
Like being a martyr?
No, it can't be. Because I can't remember anything about him.
I hear it's a real great place, Salisbury. Real good theatre.
Really cool place to grow
They're a big fan of the elderly,
up.
So maybe they don't die for their causes.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, that could be it. So she knitted it in like the house colours. So it was white with a blue M on it. And she said you could sell it and it could sort of represent your house. And I think I made something like 70 quid. I think I sold about 70 of them. I think they were £1 each.
How many were in the house?
How did I sell 70? Well, that doesn't sound right. That's like a lot. We're talking about like teenage boys.
I was going to say.
Who presumably have no interest in either a pencil topper or a willy warmer.
The self-discovery that you've had while telling the story.
I've not really thought about it in a long time.
This has come up on previous podcasts where I feel like we should do like some supportive aftercare, because people seem to have like...
Oh, God. What was I doing?
Real realizations about their life on the pod.
And I went to the heads of the house system afterwards, because there was a teacher who I think ran the house cup event during the year.
This is so Harry Potter.
I know.
Did you get points?
I think
you... Did you not have housing systems?
No!
Even my school had a house system.
Really?
Yeah.
I went to a kind of posh school, but like, no. I know that the all-boys boarding school, Clongowes, which is
Clongowes.
Very...
Yeah. Wow.
Clongowes Wood College.
Oh, that's a funny name.
I know.
And everyone used to call it
Clingos.
And Clongowes, where it was an all boys school, but there was a drama department that was in my like school circus. And that one. And so when they did a play and they needed girls, they like got, I went to
right.
that school.
Yeah.
And I knew some like family friends and people who went to that school and stuff. They definitely had houses. I know that. But no, my school.
Really?
My school used to be a monastery or like, it used to be somewhere that trained priests. So priests Whoa. Lived in my school still.
Right. Mm. Did they teach? No.
Yeah, sport. Right. An alcoholic priest was a teacher.
Of course.
And he was a rugby coach as well. And he was his fucking was mental. Everyone just called him Sport. Right, I can't remember. Right. What was his name? Father John or something. But everyone just called him
Father
Sport.
Father John Misty.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
That's
He's
where
really
he came
good.
From. Yeah. And he weirdly has a great music career going now. Yeah. No houses. So I'm always fascinated by it.
I can't remember if there were points. Or there were like events during it. So there'd be a house music cut. House music competition and then a house rugby thing. And then maybe if you won, maybe it was just based on the number of those events you won, you would win the main house.
Okay.
But I don't think it was point by point of like, you've tried
yeah,
to
yeah,
sneak
yeah.
into
you were
the,
rude in class.
The
minus
West
10
wing.
Points for Gryffindor.
Yeah.
We had, in secondary school, we were based on the two rivers in Southampton, so Tess and Itchen.
Cool.
And then in
what? Tess and Itchen?
Tess and Itchen.
Itchen is the name of a river.
Yeah.
The Itchen River.
Do you ever swim in it?
No. People make fun of Irish names all the time, but Itchen River is hilarious.
Wow. Okay. And then in...
Don't go in there.
In primary school, we were based on boats. So there was the Mayflower. Mayflower.
Oh, it's a port.
Aurora.
Oh, yeah.
Titanic. And the Canberra. So one of the teams were the side, but Titanic fucking won all the time.
Really? Because they famously lose.
Really annoying.
But maybe that's why. Maybe they were like, this name has too much tragedy associated with it, so we kind of have to rig the
system
to make
around.
Sure that. Because otherwise, anyone that goes into Titanic House is just going to be set up for sort of like
nominative determinism.
A sad personality.
I was in Canberra, and that was a warship.
Nice. Whoa.
Wow. Hence the violence.
Are these the same schools or two different schools?
Two different schools.
Right. That makes
so
more sense.
Did it work out?
I was made into a prefect because I've made so much money for the house charity competition.
Oh, it
I
went
think was
to
a house
charity
system.
You didn't get to pocket it.
Well, no, this is the thing. I made sure that I got my prefect tie and they were like, you've done so well. We should have given you a prefect role in the first place. We'll make you the deputy head of M House.
Wait,
so
what?
I ended up, not within the student. That was like a student role. Okay. It wasn't like I was taking a teacher.
Right? No.
There was a student that was already the head of M House.
We're going to employ you now on the faculty.
That would be a devastating day.
That's one hell of a promotion.
You made 70 quid, so you might as well just teach you.
That poor teacher who got to money.
This kid's been selling condoms and he's really good. So, sorry, you're out. So, no, I ended up as like a deputy head of the house, but then I pocketed all the cash. I kept the money. I think just because I forgot.
To
I kept meaning like I need to give this to... So I had it in a treasure chest at home because I had a little wooden treasure chest and I was always wondering, what do I do with this thing? It was like you'd use it and pretend to be a pirate.
Yeah.
I say you. I mean me. I'd play with it and pretend to be a pirate. And then I thought, this is a great place to store my charity earnings from the condom hustle. Put them all in that and then forgot all about it.
Yeah.
And I knew that the charity teacher guy, the guy who was running the house charity competition, he was like... remember to bring that money to me at some point. But he was stressed because it was like an extra role he was having to serve as well as being like a head of form. And like, and I think he was a PE teacher.
Yeah.
So he just went out of his head, went out of mine. And then I remember going to uni and then trying to pack up my stuff and then finding my treasure chest of,
I was
with
say,
70 quid in it.
What did you do with the 70 quid?
I think I just paid it into my bank. And then I would have just sort of spent it on... crisps and BLTs when I was at uni in the sort of first couple of months, it would have just gone.
Crisps and BLTs.
So I think
nice.
Technically that was the first like money that I think I did do the job at the theatre at the same time, but it was the first time I kind of like went out there on my own.
I'm going to be
an entrepreneur.
You were economic.
Sort of Alan Sugaring
entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's the story I'd tell if I was on The Apprentice. If he was like, tell me about a story when you've gone out
there.
Well,
I was just going to say,
money.
I feel like your mum was almost like pitching for a Dragon's Den situation.
Yeah,
she found a hobby
like
and been like,
yeah.
There's some money in this.
No, look like she employed you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, actually. But she didn't get any of it.
She got the glory of knowing there was kids walking around with Willy Warmers on their pencils.
Oh, I also made a fun book, a bumper fun book. Do you remember bumper fun books?
No, what's a bumper fun
book? You must remember bumper fun. Well, you remember fun books?
No.
You never... had a fun
book. She's dyslexic, maybe we're at the wrong demo.
It was like, it would be a little book with like word searches, spot the difference.
Oh, okay,
like an arrow word. And then sometimes
like
you'd
get
an
activity book.
And you could get a bumper one that was like longer.
Really big.
And that was called the Bumper Fun Book.
Okay,
which
wow.
Which I thought was a common.
And
bit
so
of
you made one?
Yeah, I made an M House Bumper Fun Book. So I would hide words related to M House in the word search, or I would do a spot the difference where it would be. Oh, this was quite funny, actually. The spot the difference was just two completely different pictures. I just drew a picture of a bishop here and then drew a completely different picture of a different bishop here and then was like, what's different about those? there was a maze. I think you had to help the bishop find his like hat.
And did you like print and produce this? And
yeah, I think I hand drew it and then I photocopied it. And I think there was like a package deal. I think they were like a pound each. So a pound for the pencil topper, a pound for the bumper fun book, or £1.50 for pencil
both.
Topper and bumper
a combo.
Fun book. So it might be that a lot of people were only really interested in one of them, but were like trying to benefit from the, you know, people who had no interest in fun, but had a cold willy.
That's how you get them.
People whose willies were fine, but loved fun, and were like, well, do you know what?
It's in a false penny. Economy not to.
Nice. Okay, and when you were younger, what did you want to be? Like, what if everyone was like, what do you want to be when you're older? Like, what was the job?
I was trying to think about this, and I don't think I ever had like a job in my. I always wanted to like write and perform stuff. So that was sort of
from
always
like
there.
A young age.
From really, like, I used to write stories when I was a kid that were just like initially Tintin ripoffs, where I'd be like, "What if Tintin did this?
Yeah.
What if he's been to all these countries, but what if he goes to?
You're writing your own fanfic about
Tintin. Yeah, basically, like, fine.
What a pad, Tintin.
Really filthy stuff as well. Really horrible. I don't even know where I got those ideas from.
Smutty Tintin. Do you know what?
Probably my mum again.
There is.
Oh, there'll be
Tintin
some stuff.
Smuts.
Be about
Rule
him and
34, isn't it?
Captain Haddock.
What do you mean?
Rule 34 of the internet.
If you can think of it, it exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Of porn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what?
If you can think of a category, then there's a
if
porn.
If you're like, I wonder if there's porn of that, then there is.
Sorry. Okay,
I bet that there's got to be something that where there isn't. But no, I feel like the more you go down that, it'll just quickly become really depressing.
Let me Google.
What is there not porn of?
But once you find the thing that's not got it, someone will then create something for that market.
Yeah.
But it sounds like if this was like 20-odd years ago or so, you could have been on the ground floor of Tintin fanfic.
Yeah, maybe. The internet didn't exist at the time, though. Yeah. I should have taken my stories and... I mean, they weren't actually filthy. I don't know why. I don't want people out there being like, is this guy okay? Writing this stuff at five. That's
Willy Warmers and Tintin fanfic.
But no, I would write stories at sort of five and then sort of got into performing in my teens because there was like a youth theatre. So I think I always wanted to do that kind of thing. But never was able to like pin it down to one job because I sort of remember like just planning out in absurd detail like what I was going to, like I had this thing that I was going to win an Oscar at 32. I had that in mind.
Wow.
And I was going to win.
Actor.
Yeah, actor, but also that I was going to win the Oscar for a film adaptation of a book I was going to write when I was 24. And I pinned all of it to like ages.
Oh my God.
It was so like
this
megalomaniacally
so
like worked out. And I think I had like at 25, you're going to be in a West End play, a staging of, you know, Journey's End, that play about the trenches.
Yeah.
We studied that, so I was like, I'll be in that at some point. As though I would have any control over any of this stuff.
I loved the surety.
It was mad. It was absolutely mad. And the only thing I think that I got right was the fact that, like, if you'd asked me then, what job do you want? I wouldn't have been able to say it. I'd have been like, well, I want to act and write and do everything. And if people ask me now, what do? I don't really know what to say to them. Because I'm sort of like, sort of a comedian, but so I write and act. And so I think I accurately predicted that my career would be, like, incredibly unstable and precarious.
You just overestimated.
And have no consistency at all. But I also assumed it would involve being, like, at the very top.
Wildly successful. Yeah.
Like, so I almost got it.
Imagine if you were like, if you like did everything that happened, did correct, and you look back and go, how the fuck did I do that? That every year I was correct on the thing.
For some reason, some guy just wrote and we're like, we're doing Journey's End and we thought you'd be great for it.
That would make me think that I had magical powers.
Yeah.
I would say, I'd be like, okay, now I need you to really think about how we solve Palestine and Israel.
Yeah, can you apply this to something actually useful?
Can you put like some attention
in place? Your fucking ego, please. I think I never. I just remember at one point getting really detailed about it because I was getting very stressed. I think I was imagining like loads of things I wanted to do.
Right.
And being about like 11, 12 or something and thinking like, this is a lot and I'm getting. Oh, because then I got into comedy, watched The League of Gentlemen, watched The Mighty Boosh, and was like, well, I'll have to make something like that as well. I'll make like a comedy TV show.
Like that young, you knew you wanted to do comedy?
Around like 13 ish, I think. Wow. I watched like Alan Partridge, Mighty Boosh, that sort of stuff. and loved it and was like, well, I've got to work that into all this other stuff now. So I guess I'll write some novels and plays, and then I'll be in some plays, and then I'll start being in movies, and then in amongst that, I'll just make a sitcom, despite having not done any comedy.
Yeah, that does sound really stressful.
It was really stressful. So I was like, I need to write this all down so I can look at it and make a plan. So then I just started writing years and ages and being like, right, this is the year you do.
Yeah, well, you had to map it out. Like, you know what I mean? There's a lot to get done.
Yeah.
The only way to achieve all of these things was
to try and kind of codify it. So I can't work out whether I was like...
It's incredible.
Absurdly driven or not at all, in that I was like, well, I've got lots of ideas and I can't really work out which one I actually want to commit to. So I'll just, I'll go insane.
I'll do them
trying
all.
Trying to do all of it. But I never really had like a... Because I think the original thing of like, I'd like to write and tell stories, basically, like that went so far back that I never really had a thing of like, I'll do this job. It just meant that anything that sort of involved showing off in some way or like imagining things and telling stories in some way was always like, yeah, I'll incorporate that into the plan.
It's amazing the clarity though as well, because I was fucking always like, oh yeah, I'm going to be... I remember telling my cousin, and again, when you said like writing it out, I remember being like... Well, I'm going to be a doctor.
Great.
But I was like, I'm also going to be an actor.
Cool.
And then I'm going to be the president of Ireland.
Nice.
And I'm honestly still going for the presidency of Ireland. I think it's still possible.
It's so funny.
But it's so funny as well how like I always hear like people like you be like, I watched Mighty Boosh or whatever. And then I was like, well, I need to do that. I'm like, I never thought... I watched loads of... My dad was really into comedy and like Only Fools and Horses and stuff like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I never thought... And maybe it's because there were very little women and we watched so much Billy Connolly and stuff. But I never identified with it. But I never thought that I could do comedy or like even with acting. It was like, again, because I was in a drama club as a kid, it was all plays. Mm. So I was like, again, it'll be plays. I couldn't imagine being in a film. Like, I don't know. I knew nothing about how films happened or stuff, so that couldn't happen.
I think same, but I always just like anything that I liked the end result of, I was like, I want that end result. So I think it didn't even occur to me that if I wanted to make a comedy TV show, I would need to do comedy and be a comedian. Learn how to do stand-up or like any of that. I was like, well, no, I'll be too busy writing my novels. But at some point, the BBC will come to this precocious novelist, actor, 20-something, and go, do you want to make a sitcom? Like, I never really thought about what the process was for any of it or how to get there. I was just like, I want to be that. And just muddled my way through ever since. And lo and behold, it shows that if you muddle through, then you can do bits of it. But not to the extent that you might. I think to achieve any one of those things to the degree that I imagined, you kind of have to choose it and focus on it. Whereas if you do the scattergun thing of like, I'll do everything, then you can do all of them quite well.
But in a way, you are living out your childhood dreams.
In a way, which is nice.
Yeah, 100%.
Still waiting on that Oscar.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to read that out at the start. So you won an Oscar for...
Mr. Fruit Salad.
Yeah, right, yeah.
What was the weirdest thing that someone has said to you in a place of work, either a customer or one of the theatre goers, a colleague or someone?
This is sort of a combination of the two. This was something that a customer and a colleague said to me, because for 4 years I was a children's magician in a children's soft play centre, which I won't
name. You're joking.
Yeah, no.
Oh my God.
Have I not said this before?
Well, not to me.
Right. Yeah, I got the job. I sort of was put up for it as an audition. And I thought that
through an agent.
My agent was like, we got you this audition for this kids thing. And I thought it was maybe like a kids show. Either a kids theatre show or a kids TV show or something. Turned out that it was a franchise where they had cafes, and then out the back of the cafe, they had a theatre playroom where you would go in and an actor in a silly hat would get out a little cuddly bear and make it sing and like blow balloons in the kid's face,
sort of like a party princess type
thing. That sort of thing. Yeah. So a sort of a magical, did like magical kids' birthday parties.
Yeah.
And for a while, I think my agent was still taking commission on it because she still thought it was an acting job.
Yeah.
And eventually I had to report back to her and be like, I think I just work in a cafe.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, okay, I should stop taking the money from your cafe.
Because I feel like those party princess things are a very common thing for like female actors to do as a side hustle. But mad that they went to the agent and were like,
they really kind of pitched it as like we have an acting role for you. And always trying to kind of present it as though like you were an actor. And I think there were different degrees of people working for the company of like to when they realised what they were actually doing. But there was, I was there for a while and I did love lots of it, but there's something about needing to be on in that mode constantly, yeah, where like all day, every day in a cafe full of screaming kids, you always need to be the one that is like
happy,
magical in some way. Because if you like the people that actually worked in the cafe were able to just like wander around being a normal person, which means they didn't have to be like on all the time.
Yeah.
And in lots of ways, like I had the perkier job because I got to mess around with the kids and do magic. But also it meant you were constantly like pretending, which was sort of exhausting.
It's going to the toilet to have a moment to yourself.
This is horrid. So I was there too long, basically. I was there like 4 years and probably the first 2 years
Can
of that
I ask,
were
did you
fine.
Get any magic training?
Yeah, I learned magic.
How? If you were there for 4 years, how good at magic did you get?
Not very good, because toddlers are like thick. They're really thick. Like you learn magic that will impress 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
So I can, and also all magic you need like a thing for. Oh no, I can make a coin disappear. But
like
nearly,
behind an ear?
Into thin air.
You make £70 disappear, right?
Yeah. What you do is you embezzle it and then you... So most of the magic that you learn just requires like specific props. So there's a lot of stuff that I can do that looks impressive to a 5-year-old, but I don't have any of the kit anymore because I left it behind when I left. But there was, it came a point, I think, where
the
I was like quite going through the motions with it. And I remember there was a mum who always came on Wednesdays because I would do magical story times on Wednesdays. That was like my day. And it was like a half hour session that you did. And I always found it hard to like come up with new things to do. So I would just sort of do the same thing every week. And it got to the point where this mum at the back, like whenever I got the bear out, I'd be like, well, let's go and say hello to Barnaby the bear now. And got this bear out. And one week I saw her at the back, like cover her eyes with her hand and sigh and like sort of lean into herself like that. And I felt so aware of like, oh, my audience hates this. My audience is like sick of what I'm doing. And then after that show, she came out and I was behind the counter in the cafe. And my boss, who was like the owner of the place, was sort of doing coffees over there. And she came over and tried to have a word. And I went, oh, yes, hello. And she said, I'm talking to the organ grinder, not the monkey. And then pointed at him. So I was like, okay, and walked off. And then she went and had like a chat. And then he came back and went, so we've had some sort of reports from some of the mums that that you look quite depressed during magical story time at the moment. They say that you can see it in your eyes. And... And it means that story time isn't very fun for the kids anymore. And I was like, oh, okay, I can try to be a bit less depressed in my eyes. And he was like, that would be great. That would be really good. Because remember, it's like, it's a magical place.
Oh, my God.
And then walked off. And it was such a weird, like, kind of unactionable note, really.
Yeah.
Like, can you try, have you tried not being miserable?
Yeah,
here?
Yeah. Have you tried joy?
Yeah. I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm trying.
Oh, my God.
Also, the fact that he was like, yeah, the kids have said this. One bitch of a mum has said this.
Yeah, it really became... apparently there was... I think he phrased it as though there was stuff going around in a WhatsApp thread. So, like, a mum's WhatsApp thread regulars at this place going, has anyone noticed what's happened to the magician? Does anyone else think the magician is a bit depressed at the moment? Ruining it for me.
Yeah, well...
I hope he's okay, but I go there to have fun and relax. I don't want to think about this sad man.
Having been a nanny for a number of years and going to story times at libraries and stuff, me and the mums would be like, oh, it's the Janet, it's her today. And you'd be like, great, other people are like, right, kids.
Yeah,
and you're like,
fuck me.
So when you were like, it gets around on a WhatsApp group, I'm like, well, I definitely used to bitch about some of the stuff. But I think with that, I'd be like, God, I feel so sorry for this man.
Yeah.
He clearly isn't hating his life right now.
Needs to move on.
And I was like, he's been here a while.
Yeah. It was just too long. I left there, I don't think like soon after that. I think I stayed for another like year that point. And then eventually a magic trick went wrong and I got shot in the eye with a metal rod, like a spring-loaded metal rod in front of like a room full of kids. And I managed to, like, you know when you hurt your eye and like blood doesn't come out of it, but your eye goes red because it's full of blood.
Yeah.
So that happened. My boss like got a trick wrong and shot this thing directly into my eye.
Wait, it was your boss?
It was my boss.
I assumed
because
it was a kid.
No, we don't normally do the show together. Like, so you're paired up with various different actors, and normally the two owners try not to get involved and try not to do it because they're busy running the whole business. They can't. But sometimes if an actor has to call in sick, then they'll turn up and do the show. So I was doing the show with my boss for the first time in ages, and we'd learned different versions of this trick. And my version that I normally did was that the metal rod slowly, it's like a magic wand that's peeking out.
Yeah.
And I'd learned it that it slowly like peeks out and goes up my nose.
Right.
She had a different version of it where it shoots into my eye. and I'm supposed to duck out of the way at the last minute.
No, but if you're expecting the other person to duck, you have to
ensure that's
just
what's
assumed
happening.
That's because again, it's like it's their business. So I think they assumed that was the version of the trick that was out there being done.
Yeah.
The actors had learned to duck out of the way of the spring-loaded metal rod at the last minute. But I was expecting it to slowly go up my nose, so I just stood there, and a metal rod shot me in the eye, and I managed to get through the party. I managed to like not be upset in front of the kids.
Oh my God.
I just had to be like,
as your eye turned red.
Yes, my eye turned red. The kids were like loving that. They thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to be like,
proper
it's funny.
Yeah.
My eye's full of blood. It's funny. And then afterwards I had to be like, that shouldn't have happened. I haven't named them, have I?
No.
Good. Okay. I'm very fond of them and bear them no ill will, but I do realise that what I've just said
might
sound bad.
Yeah.
So I left after that. I was like, I think it's probably time I leave anyway.
Yeah.
And they, I sent them an email where I explained all this. I was like, I'm not very happy about this. I'm going to leave. And they replied and went, presumably you don't want to do your last shift next week then. And I was like, oh no, I will do that, because I needed money at the time.
Yeah.
Then just had to suffer through like the most uncomfortable like final shift ever.
Oh God.
Where I'd already like got quite upset about being shot in the eye.
Yeah, fair.
But then had to
just
sort of
get
through it.
I wonder, did you have depression in your eyes in that one? Probably,
yeah. Yeah. Couldn't see it. Turned out that was the solution.
Yeah. Blind him, yeah. And then he'll be fine. Yeah.
His eyes are bright red now. He looks
at
fine.
The back, delighted.
He's like, that's much better.
Yeah. The WhatsApp group's alive that day.
It's a change. It's different. It's not the fucking bear again.
Okay, so you ran that for 4 years. So what then, of all the things that you've done, what's the weirdest like workplace rule that you had to follow?
I think while I was in that place, this wasn't sort of a rule, but it was the point where I was the most sort of like, how have I ended up in this position?
Yeah.
So briefly, there was a mouse problem at this place. Mm. And we were sort of waiting to get a pest control person in to sort it out. But before they were able to come, we couldn't let anybody know that this was here because we didn't want the word to get out.
Yeah.
So the guy who managed the coffee shop, so this wasn't the owner, this was the manager, who was the sort
the
of
organ grinder?
Intermediary. Yeah. So he was a sort of intermediary most of the time. And he had developed a system which was that whenever he saw the mouse on the shop floor, he would just scream very loud. And then the mouse would scurry away, but it meant that none of the other customers knew what their system was. So,
yeah. Around small children as well.
Well, I think he was hoping it was like a noisy enough, chaotic enough environment.
Right.
That the parents wouldn't notice if the manager occasionally shouted. So this was part of the rules, was that if you saw the mouse, you shouted.
Okay.
And it would run off. And then he was getting embarrassed by this rule because he was like not a performative type. He was
like quite
a normal, like quiet, retiring guy. And he didn't want to be doing all this shouting all the time. So he was like, we can't wait for the pest control guy. We have to do something about this tonight. And he said, after work tonight, you're going to go into the pirate ship and kill it. I was like, okay, I can try.
Because the mouse lived in
the
pirate ship.
I think sometimes it could get in there. It like, you know,
right,
they were like the pirate ship was sort of raised, and I think there was a network
nook
of tunnels
and crannies,
underneath the fake
yeah.
floor, so he could probably get in there. So after everyone had left, he gave me a kitchen knife, and he was like, go in and find there and just like kill it.
With a kitchen knife?
With a kitchen knife. And he said,
that's like something out of fucking Ben and Jerry's.
Fucking mad.
Ben and Jerry's.
No, it is, yeah. It's like something out of Ben and Jerry's. Ben and Jerry's new dead mouse and kitchen knife flavour.
The mouse in the pirate ship.
Yeah.
You had a mouse at knife point.
Yeah, well, I didn't catch him.
Knife crime in London is bad.
When I went in, he was like, he loves Elton John. He always comes out when I play Elton John. So he put Tiny Dancer on really loud. And I went into the... And I was still in my costume. I was still in like my sort of like floppy hat, like silly magician man costume. So I spent about
Elton
10 minutes
John,
like...
Elton John, Tiny Dancer
yeah,
playing.
Prowling around a padded pirate
a
ship with a knife. With Tiny Dancer playing. And in my head, I was like, I'm not going to kill it. If I find it, I'm going to bargain with it. But the plan was to like bargain with it. Like I was going to scare it with the knife so that it left. And then I think I just like had a little out of body moment where I was like watching myself do this.
Yeah.
Kind of... And thinking about, and I think that was quite near the end of like, this probably is a good time to leave. It was before I'd been shot in the eye, but after I'd been told to stop being depressed in my eyes.
You need to write that down, otherwise I will.
I tried to write like some stories about it during lockdown and tried to put them in a show about like weird jobs or something like that, and then never really found the right place for it. But I do love it as a
image. A sitcom that I wrote. It's about party magicians, and it's about a magician who accidentally everything that you've just said describes Sammy the character.
Oh my god!
His initial, and so I wrote down all these things. Like one of the things was the fact, because I did party entertainment. Yeah. I had a friend who also did party entertaining, and she was given some food by the host, and she was like, "Oh yeah, sure," and she ate it because she was in character as a princess. And then she realized she was allergic to one of the ingredients, and so as Cinderella started coming up in hives, and had to just be chill about it because she was like, "I can't fuck up this party." Mm. And so
it's such a mad world. It's such a weird thing where everything just has to be done, you need to be super professional and kind of on it because you're being responsible for people's kids. And but you also have to be very silly and fun the whole time. So the kids enjoy you. It's
you can't have any
weird,
real
reactions.
It's
a very
everything.
Schizophrenic job in a weird way because you're constantly playing these two roles of I'm the fun one, but also I've got to make sure none of these kids die. It was such a weird time. What did you have to do for yours?
I was a
Magic-y
party
princess
fairy.
Stuff. Great,
so
nice.
I just played games with them. I was
That's
on a
pretty
big
good. Parachute game?
We had a little. We also did wishes. So I had all these stones, and they'd come and make a wish with me and a tenant, and then they'd go off, and I'd be like, "Cool." And that was very wholesome, very nice.
How long were you in the trenches of it?
2 years.
Yeah. that's a sensible amount of time to do it.
Yeah,
that's 2 years
standard.
Is about right. Yeah.
Amazing. On your CV, then, of all the different jobs you've done, what one would be the real anomaly? Standout.
I think the weirdest one is that I was, so my title for a while was operations coordinator of the European Communication School London, but effectively what that meant was that I ran a higher education college in London for a couple of years.
Wow.
And I really shouldn't have.
What?
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's a real because most everything else, you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, you were an actor, you were a kind of struggling artist type.
I
get it. You did all this weird shit. But for a while I did run a university effectively, but by mistake, essentially. I wasn't supposed to be.
Please elaborate.
Okay, so I was a temp at the London College of Communication. Which is a one of the branches of UAL, University of the Arts London.
Oh, yeah.
It's the one that specializes in print and media. So at the time, I think now they've reinvented themselves and they're a bit more of a modern digital media college.
Okay.
But at the time, their specialism had always been that we teach you how to make newspapers. So they were kind of struggling with what's our identity, because this is all kind of going. So I was working as a temp for them, and then they ran out of things for me to do, and they said, oh, there's this other school that's renting space from us on the 8th floor. You can go up there and see if they need any work for you. And they'd opened a London branch of a network of schools called the European Communication School, which was across France, taught students about creative advertising, PR, digital media stuff.
I assumed it was a language school.
No. So it taught it was helping people to kind of get jobs in the what's even the word for it?
Comms industry.
Comms. And they'd opened a London branch, which was basically this one woman who was running it by herself, and she needed a helper. So I was going to be that guy. But gradually, I think she was very drawn to the sort of the public facing front things of it. So when we were doing media days and journalists were coming in to cover them, she would be there and looking after it. But she hated admin. She was like, I can't be doing with any of the admin. So could you just sort that? And I was like, what kind of thing?
Scheduling the classes. And
she was like, yeah, just put together a curriculum and and monitor the students' grades and give them their degree at the end of it would be great. And I'll there as a figurehead. And this sort of happened quite slowly and gradually. Yeah. But by the end, I was like, oh, I think I run this school.
Did you get paid appropriately for it?
Well, she said, name your wage. Oh. She said, name your salary.
At the beginning?
Yeah, right at the start. She was, because initially she was just paying me as a temp through the temp agency. And then she was like, I want you to work for the school. I want you to because you're very useful. And you're better at all this admin stuff than I am. So what would you like your salary to be? And in hindsight, I wish I'd said a salary rather than, because I think I said
per hour or something.
I think I said £20 an hour.
Yeah.
But at the time, I think I was 21. I was straight out of uni. I'd just moved to London and I was trying to find some work.
Yeah.
So I was
£20
an hour.
Wait, so you were 21 running
I was 21 running a university.
What?
That's mad.
It was absolutely nuts. And with the, our teachers were mostly just like people that we found, like people who did PR for various other agencies or people.
Yeah.
That, and they were coming in just do, none of them had really done it before. Because we were sort of, we were just reaching out to random business people being like, could you teach people about like, I can't even remember the names of any of the courses now.
PR, comms, advertising,
creative advertising was one of them. There was one that was about like designy stuff, I think. And I knew nothing about all of this, but I was like, you do this. So if you could just come in and talk to them about it for an hour, 1 hour a week, and then we'll pay you.
Yeah.
God, the more I discuss, it doesn't sound good.
How much were people paying for their degrees? 21.
I don't know. So I didn't deal with any of the applications. I had no like dealing with the students other than like in person. So when they came in, I would be like, hello, here's your classroom. Here are your files or whatever. So the actual process of like what the students would get.
The applications and registrations.
I don't know how that was handled. I think it was a legitimate organization and like a real qualification that they got.
But they had just got this one woman to do it and she just piled it all off on you.
Yeah, basically. And I was sort of doing my best to keep up. It was called a master degree. We were told we weren't allowed to call it a master's degree because it wasn't like recognized in Britain, but it was a recognized thing in France. So they got like this French qualification.
So you had to do it with a French accent.
Yeah. All the time.
So when they walked in, you had to say bonjour.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't really thought. This
and
is another one that I
How many years were you doing this?
About 2 years, I think.
Wow. Was it a 1 year master's people were doing?
I think they were doing 1 year, but some of them like stayed up. Maybe some of the courses were like a 2 year thing and some of them would come back the next year. And then when I left, I remember she was very like supportive of all my comedy stuff. She was like aware of it, and she would book me to do private gigs for the students, where she'd be like, "We're gonna have
the head of their school
like, is putting on a comedy show
the coordination
for them.
Guy to come out and do some jokes."
Yeah, they would coach. That was because she was like, "It's really good because I get, you know, with you, I get easy access to like putting on cultural events for them because I can just book a bar.
Wow,
you can do your hour of comedy."
Wasn't still paying you an act of £20 an
hour. No, I got like a fee for that. She was like, "I'll pay you." Like most of my early like paid gigs were just through her being like, "Yeah, I'll pay you to do something."
Self-booking almost.
Yeah. So she was really supportive.
I love the idea of you
and
a notice board being like, "Cultural event tonight, and it's just your face."
It's me.
Yeah.
I think the kids look like they need some more culture.
Yeah.
I'm working on this new bit that I could really do with a bit of sort of polishing up. So I think the students were weirdly kind of okay with it all and found it all quite sweet in a way.
And if they were, you're 21, if they're doing masters.
Yeah, they're about the same age.
Oh, I was going to say.
It's like they were all, could have been my friends, really.
Even older,
but there was
maybe,
always a bit, yeah.
Yeah,
actually, yeah, probably a lot of them.
Oh my gosh.
I remember there was a day where I had stayed behind while they were like doing an exam or something, and I was waiting for them to finish so I could sort of pack up. And it got dark around me. You know when you're in a room and it gets dark and you haven't noticed, so you just stay sitting in the dark. And then one of the students came in to get more paper for the exam and found me there sitting in the dark and was like, "Why are you here?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm just waiting for the exam to finish." And she went, "You shouldn't be here." And then I burst into tears. And that was sort of the point where I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me anymore. I don't know what's going on or how I've allowed this to happen.
Did she have to just go back to her exam?
Yeah, be like, I don't know what's going on with him. But
I'm not sure if she sounds
real. He looked depressed in his eyes.
She sounds like a premonition.
Yeah.
She just like, "I'm just getting more paper."
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
She
just backs away slowly with the paper in her hand. Anyways.
I think I just felt quite guilty. I was like, because also I was genuinely trying my best.
Yeah,
I was like, I want these students to have like a good experience of this course, whatever the hell it is. But also so aware of how out of my depth I was and how it wasn't what I wanted to be doing.
Yeah.
And then when I told her that I was going to leave, she was really upset about it, but she insisted that like the way I left, she wanted me to announce it at their graduation ceremony. But then it turned out it clashed with a gig, so I couldn't. So she made me film a goodbye video, which ended with me disappearing in a puff of smoke.
Because once a magician, always a magician.
Yeah, yeah. And again, like all their parents came over from France to this event.
Oh my God.
And partway through the event, there was just a video of a guy that they didn't know who they was going, "I'm so proud of everything the students have achieved, but I'm off to pursue my dreams in comedy now. Good luck to you all."
But also, if it was their graduation ceremony, why did they care whether you were leaving or not?
Yeah,
like, they were graduating.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were
They're like, "We're leaving too."
Then what you don't know, because you weren't there, you're at a gig. There was actually a series of other videos by every single
teacher.
They're like, I hate to break it to you, I'm leaving
too.
All the pupils, everyone's saying they're going.
That's weird mad. Job.
That's crazy.
Sorry.
I was going to, no, if you have more to say. Please.
No, that was pretty much it. Well, the one other thing, I had to go to Paris for a conference with it once. Ooh. And I remember really resenting the fact that I had to go to any of the work things.
Oh,
I
was like, we went there. Paris.
And then I was like, I think I might just wander around Paris if that's okay, and you guys can do the conference thing. Yeah. She was like, we brought you here. We bought you a suit. She bought me a suit because I didn't have, she said, you have to stop wearing those clothes. I'm going to get you a suit. And first she gave me all her son's clothes. But then they looked weird on me as well. Yeah. So then she bought me.
Also, that just is weird.
The whole thing was really, really strange. Oh no, she gave me her son's clothes and her husband's old clothes because he didn't fit into them anymore. And she tried to sort of dress me as her child and then as her husband. And then she was like, "I'll get you a suit."
For Paris,
I'll get you a suit. And then when we were there, she was like, "You have to come to the conference because we've done a lot for you." Yeah. And that was the only time where she like laid the law. The rest of the time, she was so like permissive of everything, like all my extracurricular shit. And then she was like,
"It was probably that thing as well that when she went to Paris to the conference, it was when she was having to like make it look like everything in London was legit.
I had to come across.
Yeah,
like,
so she was like, "I actually need you.
I really need this.
I know. I'm dressed like my husband, so you look older than
this 21-year-old. Did
you just bring one of the students and stick him in a suit? No."
Sorry, you've hired a 21-year-old comedian to run the school, have you? Okay, cool.
Right. Okay, so our final question of the pod is, in hindsight, what job did you learn the most from has been the most useful to you?
Ooh.
This could be practical learnings, like skills.
Yeah.
Just bearing a coin, or it could be like a life lesson.
I genuinely think that school did teach me a lot. I think I got a lot of
It was a school.
I think I had to grow up very quick for it. I think there was none of the sort of I'm out of uni, I can sort of have fun for a bit. It was very kind of this is what responsibility in adulthood looks like.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And it turned out it wasn't for me. I was like, I hate this. This is horrible. I'm going to go and be a magician in a cafe instead. But I think I think it forced me to actually engage with the idea of working hard and taking responsibility for stuff.
Yeah.
Which, admittedly, I went into a career with, not much of that in the end. But I think it was good that I spent a while doing something that really, forced me to do that. Because I also think it's something that you, get better at through comedy as well. I think for a while, my approach to doing comedy was very just I'm doing this because I want to have fun. That's it. Who gives a shit? And then gradually realizing if you want this to be a career, then you do need to take it seriously and you need to have a strategic brain and you need to have respect for your audience and you need to have respect for the process of making stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe having an early experience of this is what it's like to have to work hard at a serious job that matters and has an impact on things.
Yeah.
Are things that gradually I learned were also important, even though I then went into something that's much more kind of chaotic and precarious and silly on the surface, but that actually you need that stuff underpinning it.
Yeah. Well, also I would say as well, so many, I realized because I recently, when my surgery went back to full office work, more structured thing.
Yeah.
And you realize there's so many people who've only ever worked in a structured environment. They're so used to having, and actually in comedy, you're entirely self-employed, even if you have an agent or whatever. It's very I need to make, if I want to do something, it's got to be me. And so you in that role where it was there was no structure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you were just pulling it together
by create a thing.
Skin of your teeth.
Yeah.
And it's actually probably
actually
very
really
like,
useful practice for that. Yeah. Of if you don't figure this out, then everything kind of collapses.
Yeah,
so you
need
that drive to find a way to make things happen.
Yeah.
Probably that. I do owe it a lot. I often think of it as that was mad and why did I do that and why were they okay with me doing it?
Yeah.
And how did it happen? But also, I think it did give me a lot of stuff that I've sort of held on to in a weird way.
Amazing. Yeah. I love that.
Thank you so much, Jos,
thank
for coming
so much
on.
For having
thank you
me.
So much
it's been really
for coming
lovely.
On the podcast. Jos Norris.
Thanks, everyone.
It's been a wonderful time.
Yay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope so much that you enjoyed listening to that episode. I know I did.
Oh, it was so fun. Honestly, I love listening to it back because what a great episode. As a reminder, we talked about it before at the beginning of the episode, but Jos is on tour now around the UK. He's going to loads of different cities and you have to go see him live. But hey, Ruby, you and I, we're both out and about and doing our own shows as well. Ruby Carr can be seen in London on the 1st of February. doing a work in progress.
Yes.
And then we are both in February going down to Leicester, the Midlands. Yes. I will be there on Thursday the 12th. You will be there on, I don't know what day, but it's the 21st.
Saturday.
Yeah, I should have gone with my gut. Saturday the 21st. So tell all your friends in the Midlands, tell all your friends all around the UK, go see Jaws, go see me, go see Ruby. Please like, follow, share and subscribe. And we'll see you next week for another great episode.
Bye.
Bye.